is Mr. Bill Soberanes, I guess it is, of the August Courier newspaper up there. Bill, welcome to Open Mind. We're delighted to have you with us.
Thank you.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm there.
All right. What happened up there?
Well, all kinds of people. It was about 4 in the morning. They sighted this strange object in the sky, and most of them described it the same. There was a policeman. There was a member of the highway patrol. There was a newspaper man. There was a radio station girl. You know, all kinds of people. Other people saw it. And once one of them reported, they all reported it. And it seemed to hover and stand still and take off at tremendous speed.
Well, you're a newspaper man. You're a journalist. You live in a small, rather close-knit community. Are these people taken to having these wild hallucinations?
No. These are all very reliable people, right? They saw something. There's no question in my mind.
Have you had a chance to talk to any of them, Bill?
Oh, yeah, I've talked to a lot of them, and they're very positive. They saw something I never saw before. The highway patrolman declined to use his name, but he said he never saw anything like it before in his life.
Generally, what is the description of what they saw up there?
Well, the description is almost like a cross, it was, with lights on it, green lights on it.
Mm-hmm.
And flickering lights, but it seemed to stand still, just hover, and then take off.
Take off very fast?
Yeah, at tremendous speed, they said, yes. And it hovered for quite a while.
So these reliable members of the community, they're standing by their story,
aren't
they?
Yes, they are. Everybody is, yes.
Did they have a chance to crosstalk?
Pardon?
Did they have a chance to crosstalk, in other words, all be at a party and say, hey, let's make up this wonderful story?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
They're not that kind of people?
No, absolutely. The girl was coming on the way to work at a radio station.
Mm-hmm.
She saw it early in the morning. The highway patrolman didn't know any of them at all. He saw it. It's very reliable people who saw it. This was a serious sighting. We've had about 50 before that we weren't sure. This was a serious sighting.
Has there been a lot of interest, attention, focused on Petaluma because of this?
Yes, there has. Quite a lot.
What's the general consensus of the people who are coming up there who seriously want to investigate this? Because, you know, on the surface of it, all right, there is this strange thing happened. But if you think of the ramifications of something like this, it's one of the bigger stories of the age, really. But yet we see it dealt with rather lightly in many areas of the so-called all-knowing media. Okay. What do you feel?
I feel this is a serious sighting because everybody that saw it feels serious about it. And this happened. We've had sightings before 10 years ago. People thought you were crazy. But these people, everybody took this seriously.
Mm-hmm.
What it was, they don't know. But they saw it, and they know it was something they never saw before.
Was there any sound?
No sound.
Just this X-looking thing across?
That's what the girl at the radio station said.
Yes.
It was 4 in the morning, and there was a helicopter or something. She could have heard the sound.
Yeah, she told us earlier, yeah. She was on with us, that she tried to listen for the sounds of a helicopter.
Everybody said no sound.
These people would know the difference in a helicopter and an airplane.
Oh, absolutely.
Or a kite.
Yeah, especially the highway patrolman.
Yeah, you would think that the highway patrolman would have some idea about this. You say a policeman also saw it?
Yes. He would probably be talking about it, too. He didn't want to use his name. But the highway patrolman did say that to the officer, it was something he never saw before. He couldn't explain it, and it wasn't an airplane. Or a helicopter.
Well, as a member of the journalistic community in that area of that beautiful area of California that deals with these people all the time, what is your feeling now?
I don't know what it is. I feel there's possibly something from outer space. Why not? We've had we're sending rockets up right to other places, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why not? Why could it be something someplace else? I feel a very good chance there is.
Well, after this experience, where did you feel that there were such things as UFOs before this, Bill?
I thought there was a possibility of something, but something other people from outer space, sure, but I wasn't, you know. I know a lot of people inside them or people just
mm-hmm.
crackpots and make things up, but these people really saw something. What they saw, I don't know, but they saw something.
What do you feel now?
I feel that it's unexplainable. I feel that either we have something ourselves that some country is setting up, or it could be from outer space.
Ah, there's a point. Could it be something that Uncle Sam is doing?
It could be possible. It's something that we can't explain anyway. That's the people who can't explain.
All right. Is there anything else you'd like to add? And I do appreciate you taking time out on a Saturday night to join us.
Yes, I think it's really worth investigating. I think it should be investigated much more closely.
Are there any serious investigators up there, like you would think that the Air Force might want to come up and look into this?
Well, the Air Force has never been too serious about things like this, you know.
Well,
I think they should be.
They have their problems with things that fly better and faster than they do, I suppose.
I think that's a problem, too.
But as far as you know, there's been no government agency who you think would be...
Not officially. No. There's been some people asking questions about it, but unofficially, though.
Uh-huh. Well, I hope you keep in contact with us, Bill, if it happens again.
Would you give me your address? Thank you. I'd like to send some stuff.
All right. I'll write you a letter. Tell you how to get it there. A letter of thank you and include all of that information.
Can I get a hold of me, do you?
Excuse me?
You want to get a hold of me?
Well, I was going to write you at the Argus Courier.
That'll be fine.
All right.
And I'll send you as we progress in our investigation, I'll send you some stuff.
All right.
Thank you. What's your name now?
All right. My name is Bill Jenkins, and also Jason Rand wants to talk to you. He's an investigator. He's writing a book in Prentice Hall about this very subject.
That's some other stories, similar stories about these kind of things I have.
All right, great. Let's have them. Jason, do you want to talk to him?
Yes, Bill. How are you doing tonight?
Fine.
Listen,
fine.
I had a friend of mine who lives in Petaluma who sent me your editorial.
Uh-huh.
And what you had to say was very interesting, and I want to give you a call in a couple days and discuss the possibility of recreating this article in our book. How would you feel about that?
I'd be very happy to.
Okay, I got a little gift for you tonight. For being so nice to Bill and our other guests, I'll tell you where Dan Fry's at.
Pardon?
I'll tell you where Dan Fry's at.
Okay.
All right? He's back in White Sands, New Mexico.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh.
When we talk in a couple days, I'll give you his telephone number and address. He's very much alive. He's rather removed from the scene. He still is, I believe, interested in writing. I don't believe he's writing right now, but he's very much alive, and he's totally together, and you might want to talk to him.
Okay. Your name is Jason?
Yes, Jason Rand. I'm writing a book called The Extraterrestrial Hypothesis.
R-A-N-D?
Yes, R-A-N-D.
You
want
to contact me?
Yes.
Okay,
same, I'll do it the same way Bill Jenkins is going to do it. I'll write you at the Courier.
Yeah, that'll be very nice. Now, I'll send you the information I have, and I'll make my ad, too.
Great. I'm glad we were able to get a hold of you tonight.
Oh, thank you very much. This guy's walked in.
There you go. See? We're just right on cue
right
tonight.
I really want to hear something, because I got some really good information, I believe.
Okay, Bill.
And, I'm worth telling people. We're not crackpots like that. You know, I'm a journalist. I'm a daily caller, so.
Good.
Yeah.
You're the kind of people we want to hear about and deal with the subject. Mr. Bill Soberanes of the Argus Courier in Petaluma, California. He's been on and amongst them, among that contact they've been having up there. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind on Talk Radio 79. ...of space and people of space and all of that sort of thing. He's Mr. DeForest Kelly, one of our fine, fine actors and a very integral part of one of my favorite shows, Star Trek. DeForest, welcome to Open Mind.
Well, thank you, Bill. I heard you talking tonight about the UFOs, and I listened to you for so many nights, and I thought, well, it's about time that I'm calling Bill Jenkins and telling him something about an experience that I had some time ago, an experience that I don't often tell. I didn't tell for many years, and then when I became a part of Star Trek, I just sawed it off completely.
Mm-hmm.
But, having heard and read about the San Francisco incident the other day, I thought, well, it's about time that I call Bill Jenkins and just let everybody on the radio hear it, too.
Well, thank you, Forrest. I appreciate that very much.
But I want to tell you how much I enjoy your show. That's the main reason that I called. And it's always an entertaining show and one that is certainly enlightening in many areas.
Well, if I've entertained you just 1/100th as much as you've entertained me, then I've done a grand job.
Well, thank you, and I hope you're going to enjoy the one we just wrapped up. I think.
Did you?
You're going to love it. As a matter of fact, we wound the show up in San Francisco. The show wrapped in San Francisco a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, fantastic. I can't wait.
You're going to love it, I'm sure.
Mr. Spock.
I wanted to tell you, when you were talking about the year 1950, now this is really going back some time. My wife and I and a friend of ours who at that time was a businessman and executive with the Time Seaboard Finance Company, we were driving to New York, and we were in the swamplands of Louisiana, and it was late in the afternoon, possibly around 4:30. This was in the latter part of June, 1950. And we had been switching off driving, and I was in the back seat at the time. And it was twilight time. And about 600 feet above us, the old story, a long, cigar-shaped object whipped past us in front of us and had an identification light, a communication light on the end of it that was flickering, and laid down a jet stream. This was in 1950. And of course, I couldn't believe what I saw. I thought, well, you know, it's crazy. And my wife and the other, my friend saw it too, but I was in the position in the back seat, and I really had a good look at this thing. And off the sides of it were whipping like blue flames, kind of rolling off of the side of it. But as it went into the distance at a very rapid rate, it was, you know, I had to look real quick, but I saw this red light flicking off and on the tail end of this thing. So we drove into Montgomery, Alabama. I said, my God, nobody's ever going to believe this. And when we got into Montgomery, Alabama, outside of a restaurant, went in to eat, there was a headline in the paper that said, mysterious object sighted over Southland. I've regretted to this day that I didn't buy that paper and keep it. But I just wondered if anyone on your show over the years, during that period of time, that time frame, had any reportings that you can recall or remember?
Well, we've had, obviously, we've talked about many of them, but I don't, in my mind, I can't put one down to that that time frame. But let's throw it out on the table and see if anyone remembers that. And
all right.
Even more so, maybe someone has a copy of that paper. There are a lot of UFO buffs, if we can put it that way, that are in Southern California.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting thought.
I really do appreciate you sharing that with us. I bet you that there are a lot of people. Have you got some time just to stay on the line and spend some time with us here?
Sure, I'll be hanging.
And say hello to George Green, who is deeply involved. There's not the George Green who is our manager here, but and our leader.
Yes. Your captain.
Our own Captain Kirk. This is George Green, who is deeply and extensively involved in UFO research in a very serious manner. Say hello to DeForest Kelly there, George.
DeForest, I got a question. You said that there was some kind of vapor or something coming off the craft?
It was like a blue flames, like were whipping off of the side of it. It appeared to be...
you mean like at a high speed and
right.
an increased
right.
temperature?
Yeah, it laid down a like a vapor stream. After it passed, there was just a low vapor stream.
What was the elevation of the craft?
The elevation of it, apparently, it looked to me like it was around 600 or 700 feet, very low.
And the speed, did you estimate that?
Oh, God, it just whipped by, but I...
You mean from the back of the car to the front of the car, is that what you're talking about? Or left?
No, see, it passed in front of the car. We were going down the highway, and it was like, probably 300 or 400 yards in front, and it just crossed, you know, in front of the car.
Warp through. Warp three, Mr. Sulu.
Yes, warp four.
Also, we have with us Jason Rand, who has had an experience himself at about that time period.
Hi, Bones.
Yes, hi.
Hi. Again, excuse me, my voice is really bad. Listen.
I don't want to hear about your voice.
Listen, you're great. You guys have done more to enlighten and enrich the not only the imagination of the world, but I think maybe that what your crew has done is probably very honorable for those of us who really take this thing seriously. And I understand that Bill Shatner had a very important experience. Did you ever hear about that from Bill?
I know that he has. I have never heard him relate it. But I've been told that Bill has, and for some odd reason, I've never discussed it with him.
I think you might want to talk to him. From what I understand...
Maybe he's like me. He's afraid for many years I didn't tell him.
You guys have been busy fighting Klingons.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I ask you...
We've got them taken care of now. We're moving on to other things.
Uh-oh. There you go. Can I ask you a couple questions about your experience? Immediately prior to that, would you remember whether or not you might have had any kind of telepathic contact a week, a month, a year before, bringing you to that particular point? I'm doing research on my new book, and I have found a very strong connection between what we call precognitive awareness of things that are heard and seen within the mind, and then usually within a month to 6 months or maybe a year, that person who either has what we call dream state implant reality suddenly, in fact, sees a manifestation of the things that we call UFOs or extraterrestrial vehicles.
That was another movie.
Yeah, right. Do you remember having any kind of conscious awareness or dream state awareness before, during, or after that experience?
No, I really don't. It was a point in my career where I was moving on to New York, and it's a long time ago. It was just an incident that happened, and it was so long ago that I will never forget that sighting and seeing. I was making a personal appearance in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, or in the 70s. When I first related this story, and at the end of the session, I was signing autographs, and a gentleman came by with a young boy, his son, and he told me that he was with somebody with the government and with UFO sightings, and that the sighting that I had related to that audience was had been. Identified, or they had made note of it, that it was down on the books. So evidently I was not the only one that was aware of it.
That cigar-shaped craft has been reported as much as the flying saucer, actually.
So many times, yes. But that's exactly what it was. It was really the old thing you've heard many, many times, a cigar-shaped craft. And I was... I feel privileged to have seen it, but at the same time, it's one of those things you're rather reluctant to talk about, particularly when you're on a show like Star Trek.
Well, Bones is out of the closet now.
Yes, I somehow now I know how it feels to come out of the closet.
Yeah, you just told about a million folks. You feel good about that?
But I had to call and tell you that because I listen to you so often, it seems like, on Saturday night, and you have discussed UFOs many times, and I thought, gee, I should go in there.
You should.
And give him a call and tell him about that thing.
Well, I'm just
and
delighted
you did. I backed off of it each time, and tonight my wife, Carolyn, said, why don't you go call him and tell him and get it off your mind?
There it is. Do it. Now I want you to stay with us, okay?
I'll hang on for a little while.
All right, I'm honored to have you aboard. DeForest Kelly, that's Dr. McCoy, Bones of the Star Trek series, and the new movie will be coming. When is that coming out, DeForest?
We're hoping for either a Thanksgiving release. If not, it'll probably be December 6th.
But the Enterprise, you crashed it in the last one.
I know, but I'm not going to tell you what's going to happen about it.
I thought we could get something out of it.
But this is going to be a big one because, you know, we're celebrating our 20th anniversary.
I've seen every one of them.
September the 8th will be 20 years since Star Trek first appeared.
My goodness, has it been that long?
That's right.
It seems to me like it's been around forever.
It has. So have we.
And I never get tired of it. We'll be right back in a moment. I'm Bill Jenkins. Bob, I think it is. Hello, Bob.
Hello, how are you today?
We're doing fine.
Say, listen, you know, if the Petaluma and similar UFOs are our own secret aircraft, then we are doing a disservice to our country by asking questions about craft configuration. It only helps our enemies if private individuals in this country track sightings, and the DeForest Kelly sighting could very well have been a jet aircraft viewed from the side.
DeForest, do you think that's a jet aircraft that you looked at?
No way. In 1950, we had nothing. We don't have anything like that today that I can visualize or see, and certainly not in 1950.
Well, sir, my point would only be that a secret project is something that we widely would not know about. After all, during the First World War, the British kept the development of the tank a total secret until the day they were first deployed in battle.
Well, you know, Bob, it's an interesting hypothesis that you put up that all of the...
I'm not saying all.
The things that we see are...
No, I'm not saying all.
...are coming out of Nellis Air Force Base
or
wherever they test them.
No, not all. That business in Brazil seems like another matter entirely.
Yeah, it is.
I'm just saying that I think a lot of these organizations here in our country that try and gather information about UFO sightings are helping our enemies.
Bob, can I... this is George Green speaking.
Yes, sir.
I was assigned to the research center at Edwards Air Force Base, where we worked on all our top secret and specialized aircraft back in the 50s and early 60s. The equipment and stuff that we had, unfortunately, is a general public knowledge other than a very few craft that we had. And at that time, the only craft that I worked on personally was the X-15 that was capable of doing about 4,000 miles an hour. The rest of the craft that we had available, we had a saucer in our north hangar, which was a captive craft. And our information was that we were to tell the public that it was basically an iron-powered craft designed by Sikorsky in order to cloud anything. We really couldn't tell you anything about it, but we had it.
Yeah, as an expert, you know that not all jet configurations have a vertical stabilizer.
As the... And what you're talking about and what the force was talking about, the same thing. What we were analyzing was, and what we're analyzing right now, is there variations of craft. And it appears that several of the craft not only have are the round, the boomerang, the cigar shape, the small ball, the big one, all different sizes, they are capable of disappearing, as Jason was talking about, as well as some craft that as many as, you know, 15 miles across, the one like was over in China. So the abilities of all these different extraterrestrial ability, the things that you're talking about, are beyond our military capabilities at this point. And the investigations that we're doing, which we're coming out with several books right now on each of the different contacts, we're actually having physical contacts with the extraterrestrials, and they're giving us a lot of information which we are verifying through new books, which are telling the size of the craft, how they're powered, similar, as a matter of fact, to what Star Trek is set up on. And it's amazing how similar that they are. And we're getting direct physical evidence.
Yeah, well, I'm not denying extraterrestriality. I'm saying that for those sightings that may be...
Well, how do you make that determination? Let's take the little case up in Petaluma. It's not a little case. It's a major case because some very reputable people saw it, as you've heard tonight.
My guess would be that that's not extraterrestrial.
Hard to say. We don't know of anything that travels
that
way.
That's right. As compared to the Brazilian sighting, which is...
And the government has no business testing these craft over civilian populated areas. They have vast reaches that they can be testing these craft over.
Well, I guess if you can go 900 miles an hour, you'd get off course pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, listen, I don't want to take up much more of that time, but I did want to challenge your audience to look at their reality box and perhaps expand their windows in that direction.
Well, I don't think that we can afford to, when we see these strange things in the sky, to just become mum about them in the event that they may be something that Uncle Sam is doing, particularly when they're in places like Petaluma or over Los Angeles. They should not be testing experimental craft over Los Angeles or even over Petaluma.
Well,
if they are, then they are making a serious mistake, and they should have their little wrist slapped for that.
Yes, sir, and that's clearly your viewpoint. I would just like the audience to have a chance to take another perspective if they choose.
Okay, Bob.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate you getting in there.
Good night.
And Edson, you're on.
Hi, good evening. It's really an honor to speak to your guest tonight, especially Bones. I hope he doesn't mind me using that. Your first caller, Constantine.
Yes.
Mentioned about the silence of animals and insects when a UFO came over, and that could be related to what is called extremely low frequency waves, and in China they've used that to detect earthquakes, and they're trying to do the same around here when animals stop, you know, barking, or the dogs and so forth. That could be a similar occurrence, but it seems strange that just after the Chernobyl radiation cloud passes over California, we get UFO, and I suppose maybe Brazil too, we get UFO sightings. I wonder if there could be any relationship. And one further comment, something happened tonight, and I don't know if any of your listeners had the same experience, but around 8 o'clock there was a jet fighter scrambling in my area toward the foothills, toward Mount Wilson area, and he was only about 100 feet off the ground, and I don't think they're supposed to do that, so maybe somebody...
A jet fighter?
He sure was a jet fighter. looked like one of those F, was it 111, something like that, and he was going at least 800 miles an hour. He really walked the area around here.
I suppose we'll hear about it.
Yeah. By the way, how about the UFO sighting that might have caused the Greek air raid in 1942 over L.A.? Yeah. There's a few questions for your guest tonight.
Okay. Well, the UFO sighting over Los Angeles has been well documented. That happened right in the heat of the wake of Pearl Harbor. There were strange things in the sky, so we shot at them with everything we had.
I was there.
You were there?
Yep.
Did you see it?
I not only that, but the flak fell around me at that time. Like an idiot standing out looking up and seeing these tiny little white lights way, way up in the sky and the guns firing. I was in Long Beach at the time, 1942, and it was during the blackout period.
Mm-hmm.
But they were so distant, it was difficult to tell what it was. It looked like a little formation of some sort, but at an extremely high altitude.
Yes.
In reference, built up to what the previous car, the car before, had stated about the secretiveness of the government experimental work and so forth, it seems to me that that's rather impossible, because during World War II, unless the old folks say my memory fails me, the P-51 was a hot ship before that preceded the X-15, the Jaeger, and all tested. We had nothing at all that looked like a cigar-shaped object that was bolting off of the ground at 800 feet.
So at that time, our hottest thing was the Flying Tiger. There was that little Curtis P-40, I believe.
Yeah, the 51 was a hot ship, too.
Yeah, that came along a little bit later.
Yeah.
I have seen an analysis of that formation, and it indeed was a very carefully controlled formation that the Japanese certainly could not have done. And in fact, as we know now, they could not have even gotten aircraft here to the United States.
It did not look like a reflection, I can say that, because the searchlights were raking through the skies at the time.
Mm-hmm.
They definitely were like little lights of some sort. Extremely high altitude for that period of time.
Well, it sure got a lot of attention.
It sure did. It was a very scary situation when it happened, too.
Bones, can I ask you something?
Yeah.
You've now related two specific incidents, not one, right?
Well, yes, I'd forgotten about that. I just thought, you know, that that was an incident that happened, and I happened to be in Long Beach at the time, and... when it happened, and everybody, like fools, ran out to look up to see what was going on, and there were little small pieces of flak falling around at the time.
Okay, I'd like to put something in perspective for you as a thought pattern to take off the air tonight. I've been in touch with a number of UFO investigators over the last couple years who are beginning to form a rather interesting hypothesis about what's happening in the entertainment industry, and if anybody fits the criteria for this hypothesis, it sure as heck is you. Let me try this on you. Number one, you see something in 1950. You saw something approximately 8 years earlier. Did it ever occur to you, or might it occur to you now, that maybe you were being set in place to possibly understand something from a higher sense of consciousness that you've been dealing with for the last 20 years? You and the rest of the crew of the show have been dealing with a subject called the extraterrestrial hypothesis. That was the basic stratagem of Star Trek. That is that you travel to, you know, new times, new places, new dimensions, and you dealt with the reality box that you experienced at that time. Now, what I'm trying to get at is very simple, and that is this, that if you wanted to reach the mental, spiritual, and psychological vibrational rate of the planet, you would probably choose to do it through its entertainment media. And the United States, and Hollywood in particular, and we've written about this, is probably the information gathering capital of the world. You know, we have the best technologies, we have the best of the filming technologies, we have talent here that assembles from all over the planet to come into work. your show was 20 years ahead of its time. I do remember reading how, in fact, that the network wasn't really sure whether, you know, Star Trek was going to fly. And what I'm asking you pointedly is this. If, in fact, your expertise in the field as an actor has said anything to the world, and if Star Trek means anything to the literally hundreds of millions of people who have seen that show as many as 1,000 times, I know I have. I've got the whole collection on video cassette now, all the way back to some of the early shows. And basically, I think what we're dealing with is a situation whereby people like Ron Howard produce an absolutely beautiful, touching, spiritually inspiring movie called Cocoon, okay? Since you won't share with us what Star Trek 4, if I'm not mistaken, is all about, I guess we'll have to froth at the mouth on that one. But I do want you to know one thing, that you and people like you have been largely responsible for bringing a message about possibly the future of our planet, possibly the future of our solar system, and very possibly the future of the universe before a civilization